8:16, and joining me now on the phone, Summit County Council Member Kim Carson. Good morning, Kim.
Good morning, Leslie.
So just following up a little bit about that, did council decide to move forward with anything about looking at lighting standards in the code?
No, this was something that Doug brought up during council comments, so we didn't have anything in our packet to base any decision on or any information that we had provided previously to the public. So, but I think he brought up some good points. And I know that when we first approved that hotel project, lighting was a big concern to us and protecting those neighbors. And, you know, it's unfortunate that the way the development agreement or the approval was put together, that it's not doing that. So we'll continue. I know the hotel is continuing to work with those neighbors, but I think we need to take a good look at our code, and it may mean bringing somebody in that has expertise in that area.
All right. A Blue Ribbon Committee will be formed to master plan Kimball Junction. Why do you think this is needed?
It's a very dynamic area. It's really the heart of the Snyderville Basin. And, you know, one of the objectives of the general plan is to encourage creation of, you know, highly livable neighborhoods and mixed-use areas that are connected well with trails and transportation and that type of thing. And then we have an objective of the general plan, too, you know, to identify, plan, and create neighborhood master plans. And that's really never been done for that Kimball Junction area. I think we have an opportunity to get stakeholders together to have a good discussion of, you know, what they see as the strengths and weaknesses in the area, and then brainstorm on, you know, what some changes could be, whether it's in transportation, trails, allowed uses, that type of thing.
So the area for the plan, sketched by Community Development Director Pat Putt, includes New Park and Redstone on the east, Walmart and Tanger Outlet on the west, the Olympic Sports Park to the south. The open space area, though, below the Sports Park isn't part of this?
Well, it is designated open space, so it's limited as to what we can do there. It currently does not have a conservation easement on it, I don't believe. But, again, it's been purchased as open space, so we're very – that's going to remain open space.
Okay. At the meeting, this was endorsed by Snyderville Planning Commissioner Colin Hilton and Jake Boyer from the Boyer Tech Park. Is it something that you think business owners want as well?
Well, staff has had some initial discussion with some stakeholders. I can't name the businesses that they spoke with, but it was, you know, several, including some over in the Redstone New Park area, and of course, the Tech Center, Boyer, and the Olympic Park, and everybody seemed interested in coming to the table and having a conversation. And the timeline is about 5 to 6 months, and so that's fairly compressed. They'll have a lot of work to do, and there will be an opportunity, hopefully by mid to late summer, for some public input and a review by the Planning Commission prior to coming to council.
Okay. What we heard from Pat Putt, this committee would be 12 to 14 people, government representatives, stakeholders, and 2 at-large members of the public. So when does that committee get appointed?
We hope within the next week or two.
All right. You made the motion to approve the Summit County Fair Master Plan. You and some others had made a field trip to the Sevier County Fairgrounds. Did that influence what you wanted to see here?
You know, we really saw some creative uses of space down at the Sevier County Fairgrounds, especially in their multi-purpose building or what would be considered maybe an exhibition hall. There was classroom space. There was large exhibition space that could be used for a number of different purposes, large gatherings. There was office space, which we have a need for. And then they, in some of their, like in their livestock area, they had a creative way of combining a larger space and adding adequate space for instance, cleaning the animals and that type of thing. things that go into having that livestock show that you just might not think of if you haven't attended quite a few. I think council overall, though, we want to see space that is utilitarian. It meets the need, yet has flexibility and can really take us, you know, into the future.
So my understanding, the first phase, we'll see the Quonset hut being replaced by a multi-purpose building. How big are we talking about?
Right now, they're looking at 12,000 square feet.
Okay, and this would be used by whom? Is it just for the fair?
No, not at all. Again, council really wants to make sure that these buildings have flexibility built into them, so they're not just for the fair, that they can be used year-round for a number of different purposes. And that will be the case. Right now, the Quonset hut is booked almost every single weekend. So we have no doubt with an improved facility that we'll see a lot more use. And we are designing some office space into it and some small classroom space. So that would be used for 4-H, local civic groups, that type of thing.
Yeah, so this Quonset hut, I'm guessing somewhat historical. Does it get saved or no?
I don't think so. You know, I thought the floor is in terrible condition, but I wouldn't mind having a few boards and have my husband make a table out of it or something. I think there's some neat materials in there that, you know, some people may be interested in salvaging.
All right. So how important is the flexibility in these plans so that the facilities can be used year-round?
I think it's key. I know personally that's one of my top priorities.
All right. So what's the next step here?
Well, we approved phase one, so they will begin working with the architects on finalizing those plans. So that'll come back to council. We didn't receive a timeline on that.
All right. Let's see. The council approved a special exception for Dennis Wright's proposed home, which would be visible from Chalk Creek Road. Why did you vote for this?
It really was the best location on the lot for him. And although you could see it from Chalk Creek Road, it was only for a short distance. I think they said maybe 50 yards. So the impact to neighbors is minimal. And if you actually do a full, well, you can't quite do a full circumference without going up in the hills behind him. But if you go around to the other side of the property where it's not visible from the road, you're actually then higher and it has absolutely no impact. So we just felt really comfortable that this was the best location for him.
All right. During public input, three citizens supported the approval, but seemed to criticize the process that the house had to go through. So what about this proposed new East Side Code on hillside homes? Will we see a change so houses like this don't have to get a special exception?
Well, we are working on revising and updating. That's in Chapter 2 of the Development Code. And while we didn't discuss that code or those amendments specifically, we have had several public discussions with the planning staff. We went on a tour of a large part of Eastern Summit County to look at what different changes, what types of effects those would have. And we do want to protect the overall natural environment of Eastern Summit County, but we also realize that there's many areas where hilltops, so to speak, are some of the only areas, you know, that people do have the ability to build. So we don't want them to have to go through a lengthy and expensive process in order to be able to get the proper location for their home. So we're looking at something that provides a buffer within a certain zone closest to the house and kind of a donut concept. And then for those that still have a ridgeline that may, you know, fall within a critical area, we will have a list of mitigating standards. For instance, lowering the overall height of the building or setting it back from the very edge if they can, you know, so many feet, 40 feet or something, and looking at colors of roofing and siding.
All right. Finally, I wanted to ask you, what's the latest on Bonanza Flat?
I thought I might get that question from you. No new updates. As soon as we have an agreement finalized with Park City, we will be bringing that to both councils and the public, and we're very eager to do that. But it's, you know, dotting our I's and crossing our T's.
What's your reaction to Salt Lake County Council's decision not to put money towards this effort?
It's disappointing. I think it's going to be used heavily by Salt Lake County residents. Several people testified to that at their meeting earlier this week. And, you know, it also protects their watershed. And so I think it's short-sighted, but it was their decision to make. So, you know, I'm hoping there may still be an opportunity to work with them and that there may be a change of heart.
Okay. Anything else you want to mention, Kim?
You know, as the snow is melting, I know Roger mentioned this last week, but when you're out on the trails and you're with your dog, keep an eye on them. I know there was an incident with wildlife last week, and that was extremely unfortunate. Or actually, I guess it was earlier this week. So keep your dogs on leash until you're in a designated off-leash area. If you see wildlife even within that off-leash designated area, please get your dogs on leash. And then please pick up their poop.
Okay, Kim, thanks for your time.
Okay, thank you.
Summit County Council Member Kim Carson, KPCW News Time, 828.
G'day, Ian from Campos Coffee. We're new to Park City and a supporter of KPCW. At Campos, we source our beans direct from the farmers and invest in social projects in all our farming communities. Our coffee blends are roasted in small batches and delivered each day. Campos Coffee is open daily at the base of Park City Mountain Resort. CamposCoffee.com.
This is Stephanie, store manager at Jan's, a proud sponsor of KPCW. Jan's carries skis from brands like Atomic, Fisher, and Kessley, plus custom boot fitting to ensure boot comfort on the slopes. We also offer rentals of snowshoes, snowboards, and clothing. Jan's Mountain Outfitters, 649-4949 or jans.com.
Park City leaders thought there was the possibility that Salt Lake County Council would donate $3 million to save Bonanza Flat, but on Tuesday night, the council voted 5-4 against the idea. Park City Manager Diane Foster talks about what's next. KPCW's Renee Bodley has the story.
Park City City Manager Diane Foster says she's disappointed in Tuesday night's vote, especially since there were indications that Salt Lake County Council was going to chip in.
We're really appreciative to Mayor Ben McAdams. He did a lot of work on this. Mayor Jack Thomas and Councilmember Andy Berman put a lot of work into this, as did Wendy Fisher, and significant conversations with a lot of folks. And in fact, some of the people who voted against it actually yesterday at the session talked about how they mountain bike on that area. And so we're pretty sad about that.
Foster also said that even though the city bonded for just $25 million, they suspected the final price tag would be higher. It was $38 million.
We had a pretty good idea. You know, the city's been really clear all along that we were in a bidding war. We were going to end up paying market rate for this, right? It had a prior entitlement on it from Wasatch County, and it was pretty significant development. So, and we know for certain that Discovery Land Inc., the company who builds things for the 1% of the 1%. In fact, we heard at one point they weren't even worried about roads because they were just going to helicopter people in. Now, they obviously needed access, and that was, as I understand it, possibly one of the reasons why they stepped away.
Foster said the first thing she did Wednesday morning when she heard the news about Salt Lake County Council was get online and make a personal donation to SaveBonanzaFlats.org. She encourages others to do the same. And she's optimistic other entities will step up to support the cause.
Given how far we've made it with our partners, you know, we're still hopeful for Salt Lake Public Utilities. Now, we don't think they're going to be able to make up that $3 million or $3.5 million that we need. However, we think they can help us get there. And we're really going to be, you know, talking to all of our partners, public sector, private sector, et cetera. And we really appreciate all the support we've received to date because it's been amazing. I mean, if you had asked me a few months ago if I thought we'd be where we are in mid-March, it's amazing.
Bonanza Flat is 1,350 acres at the top of Guardsman's Pass in Wasatch County. It's on the Park City and Salt Lake County border, On Thursday, Park City City Council is scheduled to authorize a resolution to issue $25 million in bonds. Foster says she expects that will still happen. I'm Renee Bodley, KPCW News.
KPCW's monthly open space update with the Summit Land Conservancy airs the first Tuesday of every month, brought to you by Vail Resorts.
The Park City High School ethics team won state and regional competitions and is now headed to the national championships at the University of North Carolina. Carolyn Murray spoke with the coach and has this report.
Four Park City High School students will travel to the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill for the National Ethics Bowl competition in early April. Their coach and teacher, Matt Nagel, has been teaching an ethics class at the high school for 13 years.
Taya Swan, Robbie Allison, Megan Aubrey, and Kyle Haas will represent Park City. They're also representing the state of Utah, and they're also kind of representing the super region where we went down to California and beat out the Harvard-Westlake team. So we're kind of representing this quadrant of the country, I suppose. And those four kids will, they are the team, you know, so they'll compete together at nationals.
The event includes teams that take turns analyzing real-life cases. They respond to comments and questions from other teams and judges who are professionals and professors. It's different from debate because they're judged on their own views and how rigorously they think through an issue. The website says their data show that this event teaches and promotes ethical awareness, critical thinking, civil discourse, civic engagement, and an appreciation for multiple points of view. Nagel was familiar with the College Ethics Bowl program, and when he learned of the national competition for high school kids, he thought he should get involved in developing a Park City team. 3 years ago, they went to their first competition, and last year, they got as far as the nationals.
Waterford High School won 2 years ago, and then we beat them at state last year. We went to nationals, but we weren't one of the more competitive teams at nationals. This year, I'm hoping that we'll be more competitive. We had a great team last year. We're kind of new to the game, still learning how it works.
Nagel feels science and technology training are important foundations for the future, and he thinks the experience students get by tangling with complex, deep ethical issues is equally as important.
But I don't think you have to read too many newspapers to figure out that a lot of what the world needs are people that can think through complex problems, recognize complexity, think through a priority of values. What's most important? What should we give priority to? Who are the stakeholders? Who should we care about? I just think it's an enormously important kind of thing for young people to be doing.
The team of three juniors and one senior will travel to the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill for the Ethics Bowl National Championships, April 6th to the 8th. I'm Carolyn Murray, KPCW News.
KPCW News time now, 8:34.
Hi, I'm Julie Hopkins at Keller Williams Real Estate. I share KPCW's pride in our community, and so I love supporting the Daily Lost and Found Report on KPCW and their coverage of Park City's fantastic nonprofits. For real estate, it's jhparkcity.com, and for Lost and Found, it's KPCW every day.
Well, we're still waiting to hear from Wasatch County School District Superintendent Paul Sweat. Unfortunately, he was not in his office. We'll take a look at more local news now. Things are changing at the base of the canyons. Grand Summit Hotel will be getting a facelift. According to a press release from Vail Resorts, the hotel, which is at Canyons Village, will undergo an extensive $15 million renovation this spring. All 212 suites will be completely overhauled with new finishes, furnishings, appliances, artwork, and technology. The technology will include new 55-inch televisions in every suite with smart TV offerings. The communal spaces like the lobby and front desk will also be improved, and so will the on-site spa, cafe, and general store. The Grand Summit will close the day after the resort does, April 17th. The work is expected to take through midsummer. And following the renovation, the Grand Summit Hotel will be flagged as a rock resort. Rock Resorts is a division of Vail Resorts. Rock Resorts also includes properties at Vail, Beaver Creek, and Breckenridge. Jim Delaney is the president of the Grand Summit Homeowners Association. He says the transformation will undoubtedly elevate the experience for all Grand Summit hotel guests as well as the unit owners. After running out of time last week, the Park City Council has scheduled another hour at its work session this afternoon to get a debrief on the 2017 Sundance Film Festival. The discussion was cut short last week when they ran out of time, but City Manager Diane Murphy says they'll pick up where they left off. Perhaps the biggest issue to figure out between now and Sundance 2018, she says, is traffic in Old Town.
I think the biggest thing you're going to see from City Council is a discussion about traffic mitigation and whether or not, you know, in some of the events we do in town, such as the Arts Fest, we limit access to residential streets. And so I think that may be the biggest thing you see City Council ask us to do. Transportation Planning Manager Alfred Knotts is very involved in that process, and so I think we'll be looking, probably that'll be the biggest change.
She suspects that a residential permitting system very similar to what is used for Arts Festival in the summer could also be implemented during Sundance. When asked why not do what was done during the 2002 Olympics and ban all vehicles except buses and residents from Old Town, she says that's just too drastic.
We try to do things incrementally and try to look at how do we mitigate. So my guess is before we did an all-out ban on vehicles, because that'll also impact residents, I think we would look first at limiting them on residential streets.
In other business, the Citizens Open Space Advisory Committee, known as COSAC, and the Recreation Advisory Board, known as RAB, will be presenting a joint recommendation on the Library Field Preservation Project. The committees are recommending that City Council consider granting a third-party preservation easement on the library field, which would prohibit permanent structures. Staff, however, still questions if a traditional open space conservation easement is the right tool to use. The Recreation Advisory Board has said that it wants to explore other preservation options for the city's remaining 20 minutes now before 9 o'clock. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the local news hour on KPCW. Well, as we've reported, longtime Sundance Institute staff member and most recently the organization's managing director, Sarah Pierce, is leaving. She served her last day on the job last week, although she has agreed to stay on as a consultant as her replacement, Betsy Wallace, gets her feet wet. Both women now join me in the studio. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So, Sarah, after 17 years, just time for you to do something else?
Yeah, I'm ready for a change, ready for new challenges, and we're in good hands with Betsy, so it's all good.
Yeah. So, I mean, as I mentioned, it's an organization. I believe you started just as a volunteer and then just...
I did, in 1999.
Yeah. And then what, just worked your way up the ladder? You served as what other positions?
You know, at that time, Sundance was really starting to grow and take off. I'm sure you probably remember the early 2000s, the festival was getting bigger. And so every year I kind of just took on more and more responsibility. I was theater operations manager for quite a while and then started overseeing other venues and production and all kinds of things and just worked my way up.
Yeah, pretty soon you knew everything about everything.
Well, I don't know about that.
Well, it sounds like you may have given plenty of notice, though, for your departure, given that Betsy seemed like she was, like, just ready to step into this.
Yeah, Betsy and I have been working together a couple of years now and have really formed a great partnership. And so it felt like the timing was right. We are just starting our a new five-year planning process. And that also felt like good timing to, you know, pass over the torch and let it move on to new leadership.
That's right.
So, Betsy, what's your background?
My background is I've been CFOs for several companies, but I actually was in Park City for 2002 to 2009. I was a CFO for American Skiing Company. So I went through leadership Park City. I was on Rotary. I was on the board of Habitat for Humanity. And then, as we all know, that American Skiing Company sold its assets, and I moved on to be CFO and a CEO of different companies. And I came to a point where I really wanted to get back to Park City. We, you know, fortunately didn't sell our house. And I got a call, and it was really out of the blue, and it was perfect timing, and it was to come to be the CFO for Sundance. And I couldn't have asked for a better opportunity, to be honest. And came in and immediately got to work with Sarah and the great team over there. And it's just been a lot of fun, and I'm really looking forward to having already been there 2 years for many more years to come.
Yeah. And Sarah, when you first started this managing director job, it was as a co-managing director. So are we kind of headed back that way now? Because that's, you worked with, I believe, a CFO at that point.
Sort of. It was a different structure. It's a little complicated. But yeah, we've been through a number of iterations. I think, you know, especially when people have been there a long time like me and others before me, you tend to restructure just because, you know, you've gathered different kind of responsibilities that only make sense for you. And so when you leave, it gets redivvied out. And I think this is a good plan for Betsy to be kind of overseeing the whole office and managing director and CFO.
Uh-huh. So you're actually, are you separating? Are you managing director, or that has now been reorganized with?
Yeah, so I step into the role of continuing to be CFO and absorbing managing director. What we will look to do is try to understand how to support the festival operations side of it and whether or not to bring in a director to help us control that, because it is a very large job, and Sarah had many years of experience doing that. So, you know, of the void that she is leaving is probably the festival side for me. But we have such a great team. It's just phenomenal what she's pulled together, and the team is just awesome. And we look forward to many years to come. And the saving grace of the whole thing is that Sarah is going to be a consultant for us for several months to come. And that allows for a smooth transition, allows for this next festival season not to be sort of a difficult one to get through just from an operational point of view. So we couldn't have asked for a better story.
Yeah. So was that your full-time job, though? I mean, running festival operations?
I oversaw operations for all of our programs. So the lab programs that we do at Sundance Resort and throughout the world, really all of the festivals that we do, you know, here in January and then London and Hong Kong and our festival in LA. I also oversee all the Utah community programs, so that'll be falling under Betsy now, our Utah Advisory Board, and all of the great work that we do kind of throughout the year with the community.
So will that then be a new position then, kind of this festival operations person?
Yeah, that's what we're looking to do. We're putting together a job description right now and seeing if we can pull that together. And it would be a broader one, just what Sarah said, is it's just not just the festival. It is really the lab side, too. But again, I step back that we have very strong people that are in that role, underneath that, supporting it and pulling together wonderful labs and festivals. So I hopefully we'll find somebody that can step in and have those relationships within the city and the state and can help develop those and be a partner to me. And I think it's going to be a wonderful opportunity for anybody stepping into that role, to be honest, I hope.
Yeah. Well, fortunately, or maybe unfortunately, Sarah, your last day was the 10th, as I recall. You met with the city council. They ran out of time, and you won't be back this afternoon, so you'll be there, Betsy?
I will. I'll be here with Tina Graham, who is also on the operational side, and we'll be eager to hear where people are and where the city is, and we look forward to it.
Yeah. So what is it that you want the council to know? I mean, you could put your two cents in, certainly, Sarah. I mean, in terms of how the city moves forward with just the growing and the increasing traffic and, you know, all of their list of, you know, checklist, I suppose.
Right. I mean, as I said at council last week, you know, every few years we hit kind of a node where we all need to step back and take a look at how things are going and if we need to make some major changes. And we've always worked so beautifully with the city, and I have no doubt that that will continue. And we'll be able to be creative in our solutions and find a good, place to, you know, figure out the traffic and the parking and all the things that people seem to be challenged with right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, you were here for the Olympics, yeah? You, mm-hmm. And you too, Betsy,
yeah,
right?
I was briefly, yeah.
Right, and you saw how really well that worked, right?
Right.
I mean,
mm-hmm.
We had like a pedestrian community on Main Street, and I'm not sure that that's what we're talking about, but certainly, I mean, maybe that's a something to move towards?
Yeah, I do think that there's, you know, everything should be on the table to talk about. We have had a long relationship with the city, and we hope to move forward. It's always been one that we respect each other's side and understanding where things are going to go, and I don't anticipate that to change at all. But it is a city that is growing with traffic, and we have to acknowledge that. And how do we make it so that people still enjoy the festival and not get bogged down? You know, this last season was unusual with the amount of snow that hit us and everything else. And I hope that in the years to come, with snow or with maybe limited snow, we can figure that out. And it's everybody trying to pitch in and trying to come with a solution. And the solutions really will change over time. And we have to acknowledge that that's what's going to happen.
And certainly what we saw this year was a brand new ticketing system. And how did that go for you? I mean, I know there were still a handful of people that had problems with it.
Yeah, I think that is true and something we're working on. You know, it's interesting, the old ticketing system that we'd had for 10 years, and we were sort of reminiscing about, wow, did it go in smoothly 10 years ago? And everybody shook their head and said, no, you know, anytime you put in a ticketing system, it is quite a challenge. It's a big deal. And it didn't go as smoothly as we anticipated. So we're working on it now. We have working groups, and we have our ticketing company working as feverishly as possible with our development team, trying to make sure all the bugs, enhancements that we want to get done are done in time and well tested. So that is our plan, and we've already started working on it.
All right. Well, someone suggested maybe you work with the folks at Burning Man who get, you know, just a mass of ticketing. I think the difference, though, is that's for one ticket.
That's
whereas
right.
Whereas you've got people buying 10 tickets to 10 different things.
Well, that's right. And people buy not only for different movies and different ways of getting into a movie and seeing up and down Main Street and the different, you know, VR and everything that you can get into. So it's a little bit different as to how we can run it. But it doesn't mean that it can't be simplified. And I think overall, that's where we hope to go.
Yeah. So as this discussion happens, there will be more opportunities then for the public to give their two cents as we look forward to a, I don't know, what you call them, a supplemental plan for each year?
Yeah, I think that what we're hoping to do is to work with the city and get the not only the city's perspective, but a little bit of the public's perspective for sure, and work forward to a successful 2018 festival and try to figure out a way that everybody feels like they've had their say and we can and make it work for everybody.
All right,
as
well,
best
luck,
we can.
Good luck to you, Sarah. What's next, Betsy? Good luck to you. What's next for you, Sarah?
I've got a few things in the work, not quite ready to divulge, but I hope you'll have me back and I can share all my new news.
All right, so you're staying here?
Yes, Utah is my home, not leaving.
Okay.
Thank gosh.
All right, Betsy, Sarah, thanks for your time.
Thanks,
this morning.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. It's 8:50.